From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of June, 2025. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing. I'll bring you up to speed on the latest agricultural news, including a move in Washington, D.C. from the Trump budget that would close the USDA ARS lab here. That's the one that's responsible for the National Soybean Germplasm Collection and the maize or corn genetics germplasm as well. Both have been important in discoveries over the decades as it's related to the improvement of those two crops. And then as we close out our time together, I'll talk to you a little bit about the weather forecast for the day. And along the way, I'll bring you up to speed on yesterday's USDA crop progress reports as well on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.38¾, up 5¼. December at $4.40, 2 cents higher. Wheat futures in the soft red at $5.34½, down 7½. The hard red at $5.27¼, down 10¼. Both of those in the July contracts. July soybeans at $10.57¾, up 1¾. November at $10.31¼. A half cent higher. The bean meal futures finished up 40 cents. The bean oil, 41 cents higher. And the live cattle futures are down $1.05. Feeder cattle were $1.50 higher and 30 cents lower. And the lean hogs, 400 pounds for the afternoon. Crude oil at $65.11 a barrel, down 17 cents. And gasoline about 0.4 cents lower. Naomi Bloom now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. It's been a busy week already, Naomi, and you're here on a turnaround Tuesday. Yesterday, the corn market posted an outside down day, or a higher high for the trade, a lower low for the trade than on Friday, and a lower close. But today, a hook up, meaning it had a lower low, and it's managed to close a bit higher for the day. So technically, I guess, a better sign. What are you seeing in the marketplace?
Yeah, just a lot of, like you said, back and forth action. You know, one day you look at a weather forecast, and it feels like it's a slam dunk. We're going to have this big crop. And then the next day, you take a step back and say, you know, demand might be stronger than anticipated. You know, what if we see the USDA report on Thursday supportive for old crop? In terms of smaller ending stocks that would then relate to smaller carry in for the new crop. And of course, plenty of summer to get through as it's only June 10th. We still have about 3 million acres of corn yet to be planted. And so there's just enough uncertainty out there right now that the market is maybe going to hang in there to see what Thursday's USDA report has to say. And then we go into the other reality that we're waiting to hear news out of London, where the U.S. and China have trade delegates meeting to try to hash out some sort of an agreement. The news out of that meeting has been very tight-lipped for the last 2 days. We haven't heard bad news. We haven't heard good news. So when you look at grain markets, when you look at outside markets, it's almost like we're waiting for a combination of the USDA report, waiting for news out of London in order to get some fresh price direction.
On that note, soybeans, five of the last six trading days, including today, had a higher close. I guess in expectations that something good might come out of what's happening in London. What other possibilities are you thinking about as it relates to soybeans and the fundamentals behind that marketplace?
Well, we know that the U.S. market has tight U.S. supplies for old crop, and of course, potentially for new crop with the lower planted acres. We're still trying to get a better idea on demand in terms of what that might be for biofuels, and of course, with exports, waiting to see from London if there's any hope that we see China come in and buy product from the United States, or are they going to just wait until late August when we oftentimes naturally see a harvest low start to occur? And do they buy later on down the road? The bean market has been trading in such a fashion where it's been consolidating. And if you use your imagination when you're looking at these charts, you could argue that it's making the right shoulder of a head and shoulders formation, and that potentially if we don't get any big fresh new news, or if the trade talks go sour, you could argue that prices might drop down towards that 980 price point. So we're in a wait and see pattern. The only thing I can encourage producers to do is just kind of be ready for anything to unfold. Seasonally, things usually go lower. However, if we can get some better demand news, well, things might hang in there for a little while longer. And then, of course, we're watching weather this summer. So be on your toes. We'll probably have a lot of volatility as this week progresses for prices.
And then there is the wheat market, which did not post a turnaround Tuesday. 2 days of downward movement in that marketplace. Is it simply harvest pressure that's beginning to come in to the wheat futures, soft red and hard red?
Yeah, it's partly that. We had crop progress ratings, and it said that the spring wheat crop was 53% good to excellent, up 3 points from the week prior. So that, along with harvest pressure starting to weigh on things, and technically we went below some of those supportive moving averages. And so if that can continue, if the selling pressure continues, we could see maybe another 20-cent move lower on wheat. So we'll be watching for any news, of course, out of the Black Sea region in terms of war with Russia, Ukraine, but also it still is a little bit on the drier side in that area, so we want to keep an eye on their production numbers as well. So again, the volatility is just continuing to spread across the grain complex. Looking at the live cattle market today, at one point live cattle were down $3, and then they came rip-roaring right back on news of better box beef values at midday and ideas that cash would firm potentially this week. So the market summer volatility is here, and I don't think that we're going to see quiet markets. I think we're going to see a lot of price action higher and lower as this week progresses for all of these commodities.
I did see a quote in one of the news services today where producers were saying, oh, what a time to be a cattle producer. I suppose that continues to be the case.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, some of my cattle producers who have been in the industry for decades, you know, they're still quite concerned it could be something like a 2014 where once the market decides it's going to tip over, it took 4 years to make that beautiful rally back then. It's taken 4 years to make this beautiful rally now. And back in 2014, then shifting into 15, it lost almost all of it within that following year. So a lot of folks still looking at hedging. They're watching holiday demand. You know, Father's Day this weekend. So that demand has probably already been met for beef. And then we just have 4th of July coming up. And then folks are going to start thinking about back to school and budgets. So I'm wondering if we're going to see the peak for beef demand really occurring over the next 2 weeks. And maybe we'll see the funds take profits into the end of the month and end of the quarter to just show profits on the books after amassing these long, net long positions.
Thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Naomi Bloom is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report detailing some of the corn numbers. In Illinois, 97% of the corn crop has now been sown, 96% is the rolling five-year average, 93% in Indiana, and 99% in Iowa. Minnesota farmers report that they have finished their corn planting across the Midwest. 87% of the corn has emerged, 87% is also the rolling five-year average, and 58% of the crop is said to be in good condition, 13% excellent. That's actually up one percentage point from the previous week. 90% of the soybeans have now been planted across the United States. In Illinois, 91% have been sown. Indiana, 90%. Iowa at 97%, and Kansas farmers have completed about 76% of their soybean sowing. In Ohio, 94% of that crop has been sown. 75% of the crop, soybeans, across the nation have emerged. The five-year average is 72%. 58% of the crop in good condition, 10% in excellent, and like the corn crop, those two numbers combined are up one percentage point, both, by the way, in the excellent category. Man, that's a quick look at yesterday's USDA Weekly Crop Progress Report. In today's agricultural news, we'll pick up something from DTN first. It reviewed the listings of nearly 500 federal agency offices on the DOJ website after U.S. Senator Adam Schiff, a Democrat out of California, announced last week that USDA had reversed plans to close 9 offices across his state. Chris Clayton from DTN reports that DOJ had listed 110 USDA offices across 9 agencies for lease cancellations, amounting to about $59.3 million in contract savings, but says now the DOJ website lists 49 USDA offices slated for closure with listed total savings of about $19.5 million. Clayton notes the revised DOJ list also appears to be inaccurate or out of date. Across the entire federal government, DOJ has culled back its list of canceled leases from 793 in mid-March to 485 possible office closures. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., where President Trump's budget proposal to be considered tomorrow by the House Appropriations Committee would shutter the USDA ARS lab co-located here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The Agricultural Research Service facility is responsible for both the National Soybean Germplasm Collection and the Maize Genetics Cooperation Stock Center. Each is an archive and grow-out facility for soybean or corn germplasm gathered from around the planet. These are genetic sources from which commercial and academic researchers find ways to improve the two crops. Advocates say shutting down or moving this ARS unit will cease or delay service to farmers and industry, break apart optimized systems and teams, waste past investments, incur new taxpayer expenses, and introduce new risks for irreplaceable collections. Again, President Trump's budget proposal would close the USDA ARS lab on the University of Illinois campus, impacting soybean and corn germplasm collections and research. Let's move to the state of Illinois now, where the Association of Illinois Soil and Water Conservation Districts is worried that the fiscal year 26 state budget will underfund the 97 Soil and Water Conservation Districts, or SWCDs, for the second consecutive year. The expected allocation is $4.5 million for FY26. That's about a 50% reduction from the FY24 levels, and below what was budgeted more than 25 years ago. The executive director of the Association of Illinois Soil and Water Conservation Districts, Elliot Clay, says that leaves many districts facing layoffs, service reductions, or even closures. He goes on to say it translates to roughly $40,000 per district. The state, he says, is forcing critical conservation offices to cut staff, even as farmers face climate volatility, rising input cost, and mounting pressures to adopt sustainable practices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Brazil will probably harvest its second largest corn crop in total ever this year, some 5 billion bushels, and that's according to the national supply company, or CONAB, the country's food and supply statistic agency, the counterpart to USDA. The volume's higher than last year and above previous projections due to favorable rainfall in April and May. Joanna Calusi has taken a look not only at the harvest, but also at how that crop is used, along with Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson. They've written an article for the FarmDoc website. It's titled Brazil's 2024-25 Corn Harvest Grows, but exports are projected to decrease. She is here now. Hi, thank you, Joanna, for being with us. Can you start by telling me a little bit about what it means to be the second biggest corn crop in history out of Brazil?
So yes, Brazil is expected to have the second largest corn harvest in the country's history. This expectation is largely attributed to the high yield potential, because when you look at the planted area, it's increased only 1.5% from 52 million acres to 53 3 million acres. But the yields, the expectation around the yields is really good. So according to CONAB, average yields are projected to reach a record 9.5 bushels per acre this season. This is 8% higher than last year. And we can say that these strong yields are mainly driven by the performance of the second crop corn that we called safrinha, which is planted right after the summer soybean harvest. So, and of course, remember that last year there was a drought in the center west region. So, and this year the weather, especially in April and May, was really good. So we are in almost in the middle of the June. The harvest started in the beginning of the month and will continue until early August.
The size of the safrinha or second corn crop is larger than either the first and certainly the third corn crop. They get three in one season. How big is it? How much of the production does it make up out of Brazil?
Yeah, so the safrinha, the second crop, is responsible nowadays for 78%, almost 80% of Brazil's total corn production. And we know that this production is concentrated in the center-west region, in Mato Grosso, Goiás, Mato Grosso do Sul, and also a little bit in the south of Brazil. So over the past 20 years, Brazil's second corn crop has grown more than nine times, from 400 million bushels 20 years ago to almost 4 billion bushels in the current crop season. So, and you, when you look at the numbers regarding the first crop that's planted during the summer season in Brazil, it has declined by 22%. So we know that the southern states, it's where the Brazil's first crop is typically planted. But yes, we have seen a huge increase of the second corn crop in Brazil in the last 20 years.
Now, despite the larger production, total number of bushels that are being produced of corn in Brazil, your expectations are that their exports will actually decline. Why is that the case?
I would say that the main reason for this decline are the rising domestic demand, especially from the livestock sector. I'm talking about poultry production, pork production, and also the growing corn ethanol industry in Brazil, which has expanded over the past decade. So we know that during the many years and still nowadays, most of the ethanol in Brazil is produced from sugarcane. But in the last 10 years, the amount of corn used to produce ethanol is increasing. Nowadays, it's 15% of the corn in Brazil is used to produce ethanol, and around 75% of the corn produced in Brazil is used to livestock sector, I mean the meal, either for poultry production or pork. So that's the reason that there is expectation that the exports from January to December this year, 2025, will decline around 9% from 1.5 billion bushels last year to around 1.4 billion bushels this year.
Any final considerations, particularly as it's related to competition and opportunities for U.S. producers?
So while, like I said, Brazil is expected to reduce its corn exports this year in 2025 because of the higher domestic consumption, the United States exports should increase. According to the U.S. the USDA, the projections for the 2024-25 market year, exports in the U.S. should reach 2.6 billion bushels. This is the second best result in the history, just behind 2020-21. Remember when China was a major buyer. So we can say that for U.S. exports, who have seen corn exports exceed expectations in the first 5 months of this year, the Brazil's lower export is likely to continue creating windows of opportunity during the year, especially when the U.S. corn remains with the price competitive like nowadays.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. See you next time.
Indeed, that's Joanna Calusi. She is a member of the Farm Doc team and has written an article titled Brazil's 2024-25 Corn Harvest Grows, but Exports Projected to Decrease, along with Gary Schnittke and Nick Paulson. You can find it on the Farm Doc Daily website right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Donde is out of the office today, so I'll take you through a quick look at the Midwest and some of the forecasts for the next few days. We'll start in Grand Island, Nebraska, where highs will be in the mid to low 90s for most of the week. They'll have sunny skies today and tomorrow, but a chance of rainfall in that 20 to 30% chance from Wednesday evening through Friday morning. And then things will clear back up and be into the 90s again by the time they get to the weekend. Fargo, North Dakota will be far cooler. Instead of highs in the 90s, the highs this week will be in the 70s tomorrow and Thursday, low 70s on Thursday, and only 66 degrees by the time they get to Friday. Overnight lows will remain in the 50s, though they really don't have a chance of rainfall through the weekend at all. Mankato, Minnesota does have a chance of rainfall tomorrow and Thursday, along with Friday, in that 50 to 70% range. It will run all the way into the weekend. Their highs will be in the mid 70s, lows in the upper 50s to lower 60s. In Des Moines, Iowa, it's smoky there today, 84 degrees, 62 tonight. 93 tomorrow, a 25% chance of rainfall during the day. That ups to about 60% overnight. And through Thursday night and into Friday morning. And that chance of rainfall will fall off as they move into the weekend. Their highs in the mid-80s, lows in the 60s. In the northern part of Illinois, a similar kind of forecast for them as to Des Moines, Iowa. And in the central part of the state, sunny skies today, tomorrow. Thursday, a chance of rainfall, but only 20%. That'll be up to around 50% by the time we get to the weekend and stay that way all the way through Sunday. Highs in the mid-80s, lows in the upper 60s, and finally in Indianapolis, partly sunny skies and 77 today, 84 tomorrow, and 86 on Thursday. Their chance of rain doesn't come until Friday, and then it's only 30%. The lows overnight in the mid-60s. You've been listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great day.